Welcome to another round of the Football Fridays in Georgia podcast here at Georgia Public Broadcasting. Thanks, as always, for hanging out with us. However you subscribe on your favorite podcatcher, it is a three-way dance this time, and it is me. It is on the phone from the Statesboro, mi compadre and co-pilot, Tommy Palmer, and we're going to start off this show talking about National Signing Day, so we bring in GPB Sports Matt Stewart, our recruiting guru, I think is the official term. Matt, thanks for hanging out with us.
Absolutely. Glad to be here.
All right. So 30,000-foot view from National Signing Day, Matt. What are some of your big takeaways other than Georgia being number one on the planet when it came to what was brought in?
Yeah, Georgia was number one in the nation in the 24/7 Sports composite recruiting rankings. Interesting enough, though, as far as the number of four and five stars signed in the state, those honors went to Auburn. There were only four five stars in the state, and I say only, that's a good number. Eric Gilbert, Miles Murphy, Broderick Jones, and Will Anderson, and LSU, Clemson, Georgia, and Alabama split those four guys. But then when you get into the four stars, Auburn actually ended up signing six of those guys. So they had the highest number of four and five stars signed out of the state of Georgia with six, followed by Georgia with five. And then you've got LSU, Clemson, and Bama with four. Now, the other interesting, before we get, I don't want to get too much into the weeds on this, but out of the top 100 players in the state of Georgia in the 24/7 sports composite rankings, about two-thirds of those are three stars. Interesting enough, Georgia Tech signed more than anybody else. They had 12. They had 2 4 stars, and then they had 10 three stars, for a total of 12 players out of the top 100 in the state of Georgia, followed by Auburn with a total of nine.
Tommy Palmer, wow. Next question for you.
Well, I was going to ask Matt. If Georgia has pretty much, Matt, you've been keeping up with this over the last few years. Well, mm-hmm. I think probably 25. So, but
long time.
Long time. In reality, Georgia has broadened their spectrum as far as where they will go to take a kid. They've gone more national. Have they just kind of just said, okay, we surrender the territory here, and we're going to get the best players in the nation, not just here in the state of Georgia?
Yeah, that's a correct observation. I wouldn't say they're surrendering, but they're more choosy in the state of Georgia. They're just not trying to blanket the state and say, okay, we're just going to sign every big-time prospect in the state, because they've now become a national brand. They've become what, you know, Alabama is, LSU is, Ohio State, Clemson. Those programs pretty much can go anywhere in the nation because of the national brand, because of the national recognition that their programs have produced. They can go anywhere and sign. And Georgia has become one of those programs. That's why, you know, they signed the 1 5 star for them was Broderick Jones, who they got in the last signing period, but an offensive tackle rated number two in the country who had been committed to him for 2 years. And then after that, they signed four more 4 stars out of the state of Georgia. So, you know, when you start talking about the numbers, it's really just kind of an interest standpoint. Georgia ended up with the number one recruiting class in the country as you shake it out over the entire spectrum of the nation. And the quality of not only the 4 and 5 stars, but also within those 4 and 5 star distinctions, you know, they're higher rated 4 stars than others. I mean, not all 4 stars are created even 5 stars for that matter. So, yeah, Georgia, to answer your question, a long-winded answer to your question, is that Georgia has become a national brand. And so, not to be shaken up by the fact that they didn't end up with more prospects out of the state than some other programs, notably Auburn and Georgia Tech.
But wasn't part of the deal when Kirby Smart came in was to all the talk about sealing the border and keeping all the talent at home? I mean, where did this change?
I don't think it's changed so much as, you know, Georgia can be more selective. I mean, you know, if there's a higher rated offensive tackle, and that's a bad example because Georgia got two of the top three offensive tackles in the country right out of the state of Georgia. but let's say quarterback. Let's say if there's a higher rated quarterback, Georgia signed Carson Beck out of Jacksonville. He's a very high four-star. Some would call him a five-star quarterback. If there's a higher rated quarterback in the state of Florida, why not go get that guy and say, oh, well, we'll take the highest rated quarterback in Georgia. If that quarterback's not in your mind, in your recruiting evaluation, better than the other guy. So I think Georgia has put themselves in a position where they can be very choosy because they can walk into almost any, home in the country and say, hey, we're Georgia and we're interested in you. And that doesn't mean the kid's going to sign with Georgia, but it certainly does mean that the kid will listen and not just dismiss them outright.
Tommy, what else is on your mind?
Well, I was going to ask Matt another question. How much progress from year one to year two did Georgia Tech make? Three-star football players are not bad football players, folks. They can really play.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, those are backbones of your program for most college football programs. And again, you don't want to get too caught up in the numerical, but it's the way we judge these high school players. We all know there's plenty of three-star players who end up going on to play in the National Football League, and there's some four- and five-star high school players that never make it to the National Football League. It's all about what you do once you get on campus and you play and how you get coached up and how you develop mentally, physically, emotionally, from a maturity standpoint into an adult and play in the National Football League. But to answer your question about Georgia Tech, they made huge strides this year. The four-star, getting Jahmyr Gibbs out of Dalton really was the crowning piece of their recruiting class, the highest-rated player, a guy that Tashard Choice, who's the running backs coach there, former Georgia Tech player, back when Jeff Collins was there the first time under Chan Gailey, played a huge role in locking in to Jahmyr Gibbs early when other people in the country weren't as high on Jahmyr Gibbs as he ultimately ended up being in the recruiting rankings. And that paid huge dividends for Georgia Tech to get him and to get the quarterback Sims out of Jacksonville. Interesting enough, the two quarterbacks, high profile quarterbacks signed by both Georgia and Georgia Tech coming out of Jacksonville this year. The kid Beck came out of Mandarin, and then Sims comes out of Sandalwood High Schools. But Tech made huge strides this year. Just an entirely different recruiting philosophy and outlook and strategy than under the previous administration of Paul Johnson, which, of course, ran a totally different kind of offensive system and the whole thing. And, I always said that, not only did that triple option hurt Georgia Tech from a recruiting standpoint, and they had success with it. And I think we all should acknowledge that Paul Johnson did have ultimately more success than failure at Georgia Tech. I think that's pretty obvious. He did a good job, but not where Georgia Tech wanted to be ultimately. And that's where they've landed with Jeff Collins, to try to put the program more in a talent standpoint that they had under the days of Chan Gailey, when they were producing NFL stars, guys that went on to become NFL players. I got kind of off track there, but when you recruited to the triple option offense, that also impacted your recruiting on the defensive side of the ball too, because players didn't necessarily want to come in and be practicing against the triple option every day in practice. So it had not only an effect on the offensive players that you brought into the program, but in my mind, also the defensive players.
And then looking at the other schools around the state, Matt, we see from the Jeff Fisher algorithm over at High School Football America, where Georgia's the number three state in the country when it comes to talent going to the next level, you see Georgia State staying at home and getting kids. You see the leading rusher in the state of Alabama going to Georgia Southern. You see what's going on at Mercer keeping kids at home. Savannah State, we mentioned it on the show, really diving into the 229 and the 912 to keep kids at home, to keep that program around. You're really seeing the talent here in Georgia, A, staying home, and just the amount of talent that the schools in state, Valdosta State, another program that we can talk about too, where you have all of these Georgia kids staying at home, and a lot of kids that Tommy, the three of us get to see on a weekly basis, having chances to play right now.
Yeah, I was going to ask Matt another one if he has time to.
Yeah, go for it.
Keep answering my questions.
Yeah.
Were you surprised that DJ Lundy chose Florida State over his offer to go to the University of Georgia?
You know, I don't know that I'm surprised. You know, I think ultimately everybody has to make the determination, you know, what do you want out of your college football experience? And I think everybody's got a different answer to that question. Me, if I was to put myself in the shoes of a college football recruit, for me, I'd be looking at how soon do I get to play and how much am I going to get to play? Because let me tell you, I don't think it's any fun sitting on the sidelines. And certainly, while there are kids that recognize they got to take a red shirt, I wouldn't think that a red shirt would be a whole lot of fun either. But it's a necessity, and it happens. And, you know, some kids accept it, and some kids, you know, excel because of it and really develop in that extra year that they get. So I can't answer that question for Lundy. I'm just kind of guessing that Lundy looked at the situation, looked at the groundwork, looked at the lay of the land, and said, you know what, I got a better opportunity to play and play quicker and more often at Florida State. And I couldn't fault him for that.
I just remember, pardon me for interrupting, but I just remember you were really taken with him in the state championship games. What a really good football player he was.
No, absolutely. You know, we chose him to be our two-way MVP from the entire state championship game coverage we had there at Georgia State. He was the most outstanding two-way player that I thought we saw, you know, and in the entire 2 days of our coverage.
All right, guys, let me ask you this as we're now in the third quarter of the show this week. This is the first time we've really had the chance to talk about this kind of stuff, is that coaching carousel, and to borrow a line from Logan's Run, and that's everybody's Google search for today who's listening to the show, the movie Logan's Run, with carousel, now is the time for renewal. And we've had coaching changes here in the offseason. Matt, it's been a lot of the marquee names that have had coaching changes, whether it's retirement or whatever. And where would you like to start? You want to start with Lowndes and Randy McPherson?
Sure. Let's just hope that when they get to the top of the carousel, they don't get zapped like they did in the movie.
True.
In this case, at the top of the carousel for Randy McPherson, it was retirement after a stellar career. First in Florida, where he won, you know, he was a state championship contender there. And then he came to the state of Georgia and coached for close to another 20 years, won three state championships at Lowndes, and got close again this year. Before falling to Marietta in the state finals. So congratulations to him, number one, on a great career. We'll miss him on Football Fridays in Georgia, no doubt about that. But I think, you know, Lowndes kind of made a big statement when they went outside the state. You know, they didn't promote. They didn't, and I say they didn't promote because the defensive coordinator for Randy McPherson did get a promotion. He becomes the head coach at Hillgrove, and we'll talk about that a little bit more. But they went outside the state to, you know, a big name coach over in the state of Alabama, and Jamie DuBose, who had been at Prattville and then most recently was in Phoenix City at Central High School there.
Then Tommy, we mentioned what's going on with Hillgrove and Lowndes. Hillgrove's Philip Ironside ends up going to Worth County. That was the stunner, I think, in all of this.
Yeah,
that was that is a stunner. You know, unless it's one of these, I want to go back home moves, and I did not investigate, you know, where they're from.
Yeah, he just wanted the small town feel. That's literally in the interviews. He'd heard all of this time about what it was like to coach in a small town here in the state of Georgia and get that feel, and he's going to be getting that now in Sylvester.
Well, in Sylvester, he's got an opportunity there to really build a good program. They're a good athlete there. And they've gone through many, many coaching changes over the last 10 or 12 years. But Worth is a good program where they have a tremendous heritage from 20, 30 years ago. And I'm sure he probably did his research and decided, you know, I'd like to go there. And the county of Worth certainly has plenty of athletes.
Matt, when you look at Philip Ironside leaving Hillgrove and heading south, what entered your mind?
Well, I mean, you're talking about the only coach that Hillgrove had ever had. You'd had a lot of stability there. It was much like the McEachern situation. Of course, McEachern's their big rival. And just last year, Coach Hockman left McEachern and went south. I don't want to put it the wrong way, but kind of a retirement job, kind of a move to the coast kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know, this is, and I don't know whether this is the case with Ironside or not, but it sounds kind of like that. Okay, I've done the big city thing. It's time to, you know, let's take it down a notch from the busy side of life. And I don't know. I mean, you know, some of these small towns in high school football, I can't speak to Sylvester and Worth, but you know, they can be tough places to coach.
Mm-hmm.
There's no doubt about that because the microscope is on you 24/7, 365. Even more so than you get in some of these Metro Atlanta schools, which, you know, they get lost in the shuffle of the busyness of the area surrounding them. So it could be an easier thing or it could be a much tougher thing. I don't know. And that remains to be seen. But, that's what jumped out to me about the Hillgrove thing is, wow, this is a big transition. This is a big hire for them. They have not had to make one since they started the program over a decade ago. So, yeah, I think that's what stands out in my mind.
And then, Tommy, obviously the situation in Valdosta, as we're talking, is still in flux. But the idea right now that Alan Rademacher was voted out by the board of education down there in the city of Valdosta by a 5-4 vote, and it's still in flux as we're talking, so we don't necessarily want to put a period at the end of the sentence, but it's just another situation in Valdosta where you're sitting there and there's a lot of question marks attached.
Well, the thing that concerned me was that was probably the biggest shock to me in the after season. You know, I could not believe it when I read it. I thought it was a misprint the first time I saw it.
Right.
But it's a shocker. You hate it for him, and you have to wonder, you know, if they do not change their vote, what's he going to do? This is a man with a 37-16 record, a state championship, region championships, playing in arguably the toughest 6A region in the state of Georgia. Where's he going to go?
Right.
You know, time's moving along here.
Matt, about Alan Rademacher.
Yeah, well, I mean, from what I was able to read, it sounded like he was totally blindsided by the vote, by the school board. He had no idea it was coming. In fact, he wasn't even at the school board meeting. He kind of figured that, you know, his approval to be the head coach again was a rubber stamp. There was no need for him to be there to argue his case. And as Tommy pointed out, he's had a tremendous record. They were back in the state quarterfinals this year. And I think, was it the state quarters or the semifinals the year before? I think the semis.
Yeah.
I think, or maybe not. Anyway.
It's another deep playoff run.
Yeah, and, you know, the program, you know, we don't have to go into the whole history, over 20 state championships and all that kind of stuff. There's a bunch of high pressure on the job. But, you know, from what I read, I don't want to speculate because I'm not plugged in, but it was not about it wasn't about record. And it didn't sound like it was about character or anything. I'm not exactly sure what it was, but it certainly didn't sound like it was right. And that Alan Rademacher got a raw deal there.
And we'll keep an eye on that as the offseason continues. Gentlemen, that is another round of the Football Fridays in Georgia podcast. Tommy, thanks as always for coming in with us from Statesboro. We'll be catching up with you in just a little bit. And Matt, thanks for your insights as always when it comes to one of the seasons that is here in the South. It is not summer, fall, winter, and spring. It is football, spring football, Cruton, and National Signing Day. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Enjoyed it.
And that is another round of the Football Fridays in Georgia podcast here at Georgia Public Broadcasting. Subscribe on your favorite podcatchers. The show is, as always, produced by the irreplaceable Sean Powers. Play it safe, everybody. We'll see you next time.